are now listening to the Serious Growth Podcast with your host, Leo Costa Jr.
Hey, listen, I want to welcome both of you guys back to Serious Growth Podcast. I know you've both been on, and I appreciate you coming today. And I got to tell you something before we talk about Phil. I got to just share some stuff that's really fucking irritating and frustrating to me. And at the end of the day, it probably doesn't really matter. But the older that I get, I know less about life and death and how it all factors into all this thing. This shit really pisses me off because, you know, so many of the good ones go. Phil was one of the good ones in my view. I just don't understand shit like this when things like this happen. But, you know, the old saying, I hate it, it is what it is. But, boy, I tell you what, it irritates me. And I, like I said, I know less now. You think I know more about, you know, I know more about life and death. And I don't know. I don't get it.
Yeah, anyway.
I mean, when we're getting older, you know, we want to, so we get wiser, but also when we get older, suddenly, you know, you say, oh my God, I remember when I was 20 years old, somebody was 60, I said, oh, he's an old guy. Now I'm that old guy. Yeah. And when we get older, you know, we try to now live less our life healthy and long as possible.
Yeah.
You know, I'm 69, I'm enjoying life, I'm healthy. I am as happy when I was 20, as long as you didn't have to go to the emergency and see doctors.
Yeah, and that's cool. And yet, you know, on the other side of it, it's like I had, this happened a few years ago. My son had, they were having the babies, twin babies. And 2 weeks before they're supposed to be born, a weird thing happened. They both died. What the fuck? Wow. What the fuck is that all about? They only get a chance. Wow. You know, I don't know. It's just, it'll never change. It's just something that just really, it really angers me, but it is what it is. And I want to talk about Phil. He's our fallen bodybuilding brother and a friend. I think Phil was closer to you guys, I think, than he was to me. I met him, obviously, and when he did work with me in bodybuilding for the Serious Growth. But who knows Phil longest? Is it you, Emmerich, or is it you, Jerry?
Well, I think Emmerich was for longer.
I met Phil, he was about 20 years old, and I think he did like second contest for the Orange County contest. I met him there. I went to see Serge Dubray because he was there for seminar or signing pictures. So then that's the first time I saw Phil, and I couldn't believe it. He was only like 200 pounds, but back then, we're talking about the 80s. He, 200 pounds back then, for his height, was unbelievable. So he heard my accent talking, immediately we get connected. He said, where are you from? From Romania. You know, asked me a few things, how the Romanians, what he says, what they're doing, what they're taking, how they pass the drug tests when they're competing in the weightlifting in the Olympics, etc. We shared a little how he works out, how I work out, and we immediately hooked because he had a very similar principle like I have. Mine is a little different. I do believe to hit each muscle group every single day, one way or other. So, and he had that theory too. And then, you know, we changed phone numbers, and from that day on, we became very good friends.
How about you, Jerry? When did you meet Phil?
Well, I first became aware of him, seriously, it was through the Serious Growth ads in the magazine. When you guys first put him in the magazine, yeah. You know, nobody really knew his name. He wasn't a pro, but the size of him, it caught your attention. Like, he was the picture in the ad, right? Yeah. And of course, the way that you guys used to make those ads, like, you would highlight certain words that would, like, grab your attention. And I really started just following Phil as, like, a bodybuilder, just trying to find out what I could at the time about him, which it wasn't a lot because back then we had the magazines, but there's no online. So it was kind of, here and there, you could find little things. And all of a sudden, I joined this forum, and Emmerich was in the forum also. It's called Professional Muscle. And he was there. And I was like, I didn't think it was him. I thought it was like a fake person using his picture. And it turned out to be him. Yeah. And it was like, I couldn't believe it because here's a guy that I looked up to and, you know, pretty much idolized the way his physique was, didn't know anything about him really. And all of a sudden, now I have access to him. And that forum at the time wasn't like it is now. There's all kinds of chaos and stuff. There was like a close-knit group of guys. And we bounced ideas off of each other and talked about things and had DMs and phone calls. And like, it was really more of like a family oriented, really like close knit group. And that's where I first talked to Phil right there. And I couldn't believe how nice he was and how willing he was to go out of his way, you know, to talk to me about things that otherwise I never would be able to talk about.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, the way you're describing that form reminds me back in the late 80s when the camaraderie inside the gyms, for example, like in Gold's Gym, because I did a lot of training there at Platts, the camaraderie was so different. It was people were there to share information with each other. Yeah. It wasn't like it is now. It's very different. So it sounds like what you're talking about was the same way, the way people were sharing information.
Absolutely.
I'll tell you what, when I first met Phil, I think he was the epitome of serious growth, to be honest with you, because like you're saying, Jerry, not only was he huge, but dense. He had that fucking look that not too many people, even today, I don't think, you know, for his size and everything, I think it was amazing that way.
There was a thickness.
Yeah.
It was insane.
Yeah.
Every body part.
Yeah. And I tell you what I learned about Phil as I got to know him is that Phil was pretty deep. There was more to him that met the initially the eye, you know. I mean, that's sort of
picking up. He was deep, and he had a lot of demons that he battled with, you know, which is like body dysmorphia was one of the ones that we talked about a lot. And he was a deep guy, and like I saw as he got older, like the rest of us, he got more and more into the health aspect.
Yeah,
he got more into like warning the guys about, listen, yeah, I did this, but I got away lucky. That doesn't mean you're going to get away lucky. So I saw him go from being the guy that was, I don't want to say reckless, but would be willing to tell these guys to push the envelope into shifting into the guy that was kind of warning them about, look, you know, I was wrong before. And he would say that stuff like, yeah, I used to do this, but I was wrong. You know, so I saw his personality change, and that was awesome to see him grow as a person and turn into that new version of himself.
Yeah. Well, you know what, as we know, especially Emmerich and I, cause Jerry, you're a little pup compared to Emmerich and I, especially Emmerich. Yeah, Emmerich's old. But you know, that firsthand experience, my dad used to tell me, you it's hard to replace firsthand experience. And Phil was sharing that, as we all kind of do now, as we're getting along in this thing, you learn stuff, and you learn that some of the stuff that you did had some severe consequences. Now, I don't know if what, you know, Phil passing like you did, if that was a direct result of the stuff that he did before. When I talked to Phil, he didn't seem to, I mean, he said, look, his liver damage, or as it was something that was in his life, in his DNA, I guess, in his family history. Is that true?
Well, as far as I know, what had happened was when he got cancer, that's what really spawned all this stuff. Now, Phil really did go towards the health route. Like, he was all about eating, you know, very vitamin and mineral based, eating things that were, you know, as natural to the source as you could, only eating when you're hungry, so you're not stuffing yourself, you know, to where you're taxing your body trying to digest the food. Like, he really, you know, Humana Forte was one of his big things that he thought was really well, it helped really well with health. And, you know, once he got cancer, that was when I think a lot of the stuff really started happening. So when I spoke to him, he said that basically what happened was they used these like gold seeds that they put in your prostate, and the radiation, it's like targeted radiation into these gold seeds. Well, something had swelled his prostate up from that, the cutoff is urethra or whatever it was, and it backed up the urine into his kidneys, which basically fried his kidneys. And at the same time, it fried his liver. So he wound up having to have a kidney and a liver transplant based on, you know, his cancer treatments that he had. Yeah. But before that, he had never said anything about any issues, really.
You know, I didn't even know.
His body weight up, too. He was like 250 pounds ripped, you know, and he wasn't really having any issues or anything. Once the cancer came along, I think that was really when his issues started.
I didn't know he had cancer. Emmerich, did you?
Yeah.
Well, the way he explained me that after the treatment, he told me that, I think I didn't have cancer, that he told me.
Wow. He thinks he didn't have it?
Yeah, he thinks that's treatment, but he said, I don't think I had the cancer.
Think it was misdiagnosed?
Yeah. He, you know, he was really always looking, almost seems to make Phil feel, don't look, find something, what you thinking too much about wrong situation, and, you know, you will basically talk yourself into it, because, you know, you have the placebo effects. Always think about, I have this, I have that, I have this, I have that. Just don't think about anything negative. He was really concerned about all kind of health problems. But what I think, what triggered him first, because, you know, he's the kindest and gentlest man I ever know. You know, he was never attacking anybody, and, you know, all the time. And I'm not going to mention who was, but he took some natural supplement, supposed to take two capsules, and then he took only one, and they could not wake him up about 5 days. He was in hospital. I don't know if you remember that. He was like almost like in coma sleep.
Yeah.
from some supplement. I'm not going to talk about who gave it to what. And I
was
think
it natural? It was a supposedly. Supplement? Oh, so it wasn't a drug?
No, it wasn't a drug. Right. We don't know.
Right.
It took him as certain. So after that, I started him start emotionally. He has started to get short temper, you know, and then, you know, at that time, a professional muscler had some arguments with Dante back and forth. And he, you know, finally either he left professional muscle or they banned him. I'm not quite sure about that. But after that, I start seeing something emotionally was affecting him. And from that point on, I was looking for what I'm going to find, what's wrong inside of me. So I was doing all these tests. I was going to Boston to a Dr. Lady, be tested, all places. Actually, he was looking for, almost seems to me that he wanted to find something wrong.
That's interesting, because he did start going to a lot of doctors, having a lot of tests and stuff run. And he talked about these things when there really wasn't anything wrong with him. Like, he didn't have any symptoms or anything like that, but he was constantly having like blood work done and testing this level. And, you know, that's interesting that you say that he was looking for something because he thought something might be wrong. Like, it might have been all in his head, like a hypochondriac type thing.
Yeah. Now, how old was he, Emmerich, when this was going on? When he started changing, his temperament started changing. Is this like
about 4 years ago?
4 years ago. Now, the cancer that he had, was it way before that? And was he still, after he had the cancer and supposedly treated it, was he able to train and compete? I didn't know he had cancer.
I remember that things start happening after he woke up from that 5 day sleeping, and you know, poor Pamela was so worried about him, was in hospital every day. They couldn't wake him up, and finally wake up, and I'm wondering that one way or other, it may affected him neurologically, you know. But even that, he became a little short of temper, but he still was the nicest guy. And, you know, last time I spoke with him, was real upbeat, happy. He had his cataracts removed, and he was looking for the eyelet surgery. He was really, 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 really fortunate. So last time I spoke with him was very excited about new life, basically.
Well, that's interesting. See, I didn't know about the supplement he took, Leo, but he did have Bell's palsy. He had prostate cancer. He had all the cataracts. He had all these things happening. You know, what's crazy is like, we knew him for years and years, decades, and everything was fine. It seemed like everything hit him all at once.
Yeah.
And I wasn't really, it didn't, you know, I just thought maybe, as you know, as we age, things start going wrong.
Right.
You know, and that's just how it is. But now, like Emmerich talking about this supplement, now it kind of makes sense. Like, there's a timeline now. Actually kind of makes sense. And I wasn't aware of that supplement. It's not something that he made public or, you know, talked about or anything like that.
You know,
no, he didn't want to talk publicly. And also Pamela, his wife, she doesn't talk anything publicly. So I will be very limited what can I say to things, because I want to respect the privacy. But in my point of view, something after I fall asleep for those many days, after things start to go the opposite way, you know, he wasn't as happy anymore. And then now having the kidney, waiting for the transplant. But in the meantime, a donor was available, other things. So he was really, I would say, last time I spoke with him was June.
Let's take a quick pause to tell you about something you're definitely going to want.
Do you want a bone-crushing grip? Good, because you're going to get one with the amazing new TRS Gripper. It's a progressive grip builder with longer handles and a special ergonomic design that's like a dozen hand grippers in one. Start off easy and work your way up to quickly build your grip strength from wet noodle to pulverizing. The package includes a video from the world-famous strength coach, Dr. Russ Horine, the man who worked with Leo Costa to help bring you big beyond belief in the Bulgarian Power Burst. Dr. Horine shows you a simple and easy to follow workout plan that takes just minutes a day right from in front of your TV set if you want. So click on the link below and let's get started building you a stronger, firmer, bone-crushing grip.
June 11th, I think, it was so happy. You know, he moved into the brand new condominium. He was really looking for the future.
You know, when I knew Phil, I mean, what struck me about Phil, he was much deeper than what I thought originally. You know, he thought about shit to the nth degree. He was like, you know, part of my creed is that, learning and having nth degree mentality, like really inspecting, like when I get into something, whatever it is, I just don't get into it. I analyze it, like Platt used to say. I look at it, I taste it, spit it out, and chew it again. And so I'm really perplexed about this natural supplement that he took. I wonder if, does anybody know, I wonder if he just took it blind faith or if he knew what he was getting into, because fuck, man, you sleep for 5 days? What the fuck?
Bill's usually the type of guy, too, that doesn't do the blind faith thing. Like, he goes through, he'll nitpick everything and get every piece of information he can.
Yeah.
And then he actually regurgitates that stuff to everybody to let them know, like, look, this is what's, you know, what you guys may not know. So that's crazy that he would take it with blind faith. And he must have trusted whoever gave it to him.
Yeah.
It just feels too nice to even do something about. He was just, that I wish Phil would be more like put his feet down, because a lot of people took advantage of him. Even the black men with the twin lab, you know, when he won USA and he was at some photo shots for the Twin Lab magazine, you know, the muscular development, and was one of the black men with him. And Phil called me. He said, "I mean, you know, they're doing a photo of me, and they said they're going to give me a contract." He said after the photo shot, he said, "Let me talk with you." So I talked with Steve. Yeah. I said, "You know what? Stop doing the pictures on Phil too. I see the contract." He said, "Who are you?" I said, "You know, I'm his friend. I'm representing him now." And he said, "Well, it's up to Phil." And I talked to Phil. He said, "You know, America, I trust them. They're going to give me a contract." So these other photo shots, never a contract.
Wow.
Never happened a contract. So then, of course, he had the first monster with looking still aesthetic. So I took him. I had a meeting with Joe Weider, and I took his picture from the USA and I showed to Joe. And Joe said, "Who's this guy?" I said, "He just was USA." He said, "Really? Come with me." So I think Tom Dieters was the chief editor back then. And Joe asked, he said, "How come you never told me about this guy?" He said, "Oh, you know that, he beat Mike Greg Titus, but, you know, we know we have pictures on him." So then Joe told me, he said, "I want you to bring this guy to me." So I went home and I flew back with Joe, with Phil. He gave him a contract on the spot. And I told Joe the story with the black males. And Joe was ready. He said to Phil, "You know, I can go sue them on your behalf because they cheated on you out. And you should go after any magazines that had your picture on. We can sue them." But Phil was like, "No, I don't want anything." So if Phil would be a little more, you know, but he was really concerned. He didn't want to hurt anybody.
Yeah, you know,
even they did something wrong to him, he still, you know what, "I just want to die. I don't want to hurt people."
But I want to tell you something. As nice as he wasn't, and I applaud him for being that, but you know, when you're in that industry, Jerry, you know this, it's a cutthroat business, a really cutthroat business. And you know, if you're going to be that bodybuilder that gets into it, and it can be across the board, it can be in football, whatever, you know, it's like when I had my strokes, you have to be willing to ask and go out and protect yourself. You know, in my case, when I had these strokes and I was paralyzed, if I just would have put myself in somebody else's hands, and it's good that he had people like you, Emmerich, when he ran across, it seems like a bunch of other people that didn't really care about him. I still maintain that you have to be yourself willing to be a part of that process. Because otherwise, you're going to get fucked over all the time. Yeah. That's just my opinion, you know. And I'm sad that Phil got taken advantage of like that. But like you said, Emmerich, I think he just needed to be a part of that process more. And some people just aren't, you know. And unfortunately, in some ways, it didn't work out for him. I guess as far as advancing.
Go ahead. He could be Mr. Olympia. He loves to workout. He did hate competing. He didn't care about competition. He loved the gym. That was like his laboratory. And what's good about, see, the first time when we met, he said, I pick up your brain because you're way older than me and you went to who knows how many workout systems. So he asked me how I come to the conclusion that stimulating that same muscle every day is beneficial and actually grow faster. And explain, you know what? I didn't have not even weights. I was doing just push-ups, chin-ups, and bodyweight squats for the first year of when I started. And I was doing like push-ups every other day. Then I started doing push-ups every day. Then I started doing push-ups twice a day. And sometimes I wake up middle of night and do push-ups, and I was growing faster. So I realized that, you know, that muscle recovers very quick. If you put heavy loads on the joint tendons, that takes longer. But if you're stimulating that muscles and not overtraining it, you can do it over and over. Like you said, when last time I was replaced, Leo, the Bulgarians, they said you didn't need more than 6.5 hours to muscle recover.
Yeah, the whole point of it to begin with was just not to overtrain to begin with, so your body could recover in that time. Jerry, did you ever train with Phil?
Yeah. Matter of fact,
talk about that.
Throughout the years, Phil had seen me train with other trainers and coaches. And actually, Brad Hollabaugh was one of my coaches, who was a good friend of Phil's. And he would always say, Jerry, just give me a chance. He's like, I know what to do. I know what we can do. And I'm like, we were friends and I didn't want to like go that route. You know, it's like, you know, sometimes the relationships end bad. And I'm like, Phil was one of my idols and now I'm friends with him. I don't want to put myself in that position.
Yeah.
So what I did was I actually hired him for my ex-girlfriend and he trained her. And you know, he did a great job. And what was funny was, you know, I was watching her and I'm thinking, you know what? Okay, maybe we just give Phil that try. So in 2012, I said, all right, Phil, let's do it. And he said, okay. And we did, you know, we did 2012 and he was like, I know what to do, but listen, it's an experiment. Like, we're going to have to figure out as we go along. And again, I went from, you know, 2011, I was kind of going backwards. 2012, I went ahead again. And then 2013 came and he was very big on like the all fruit diet. So we were only eating fruit, right? And he was like, stay covered up in the gym. Like, don't run around in a string tank top, just stay covered up. So lo and behold, we have this friend, Rich Greenbaum. I don't know if you know Rich Greenbaum.
I don't think so.
So he was friends with Philly. They'd known each other for a while. Yeah. And he saw me in the gym and he calls Phil. And he said, what, you're working with this guy? And he said, he goes, he's eating pineapple. Because he's like 4 weeks out. He goes, and Phil goes, oh, I didn't tell him. He starts messing with him. He goes, I didn't tell him to do that. I can't believe he's doing that. So Phil calls me immediately. He goes, hey, listen to me. Make sure you keep your clothes on because, you know, people at the gym, they're noticing what you're eating. He goes, we don't want anybody to see what's going on. And they just see my face getting more and more sunk in.
Yeah.
And I'm eating pineapple and mango and drinking fruit juice. And they're thinking like, this guy's insane. Well, that was the driest and hardest I'd ever been on stage. People couldn't believe that I was eating all this fruit and I was eating when I was hungry. Like, there was no specific times. Yeah. And that was really one of those things where, you know, him and I were like, if we were like fist bumping, like we got him now, just because of the people that were paying attention, because it was so different. Like Emmerich says, you know, he trains his body, the whole body every day. Francis Benefetto used to train like that back in the day, every body part every day. Well, Phil really got me to realize that even if you're training back, you're still training chest, legs, core, your body grows as a unit. So it doesn't matter really. I mean, yes, you're using certain muscles that you're moving those weights and those movements, but that's when I really understood from working with Phil that the body grows as a unit. Which is why you see those construction workers that have the jackhammers, their entire bodies get big just from that one movement of holding the jackhammer, because their body has to adapt to that stress.
Right.
And it was really like, you know, I learned a lot working with Phil. I was really happy that he wasn't big on pushing drugs. You know, he was really about moderation, but at the same time, like, he knew that I had a limit and he was so respectful of that. Like, he kept saying over and over again, look, to get to the next level, you know, you're going to have to do this. I'm like, I really don't want to. He goes, I understand that. It's totally cool. And I respect that. He's like, I'm happy you don't want to do that.
Yeah.
I just want you to know that the option is if you want to go there, you have to do this. Yeah. You know, so it was always like, it was never a coach student relationship. It was always two friends.
Yeah.
But I was the type of person that I never asked questions. I just did what he told me to do. And then I tried to figure it out on my own.
Yeah.
And then later on, we talked like after the shows and stuff. I'd be like, hey, did we do this because of this? And we'd have conversations about that and stuff. And, you know, it was eye opening because it was so different. Like, we didn't really hammer cardio. We ate fruit. We ate when we were hungry. We were doing these body part splits where it was like the whole body 4 or 5 times a week. It was really not what the average person would think it is. And they all looked at me like I was absolutely crazy in the gym.
Yeah.
But when all was said and done, they were like, wow, I can't believe that what you were doing produced those results. And it was all Phil's idea.
You know, one of the things I've learned about being on this podcast, because I've interviewed a lot of bodybuilders, you know, the old timers and just a lot of guys. And one thing is for sure, there's a lot of ways to skin a cat. Yeah, you got to figure out how to skin your cat, you know, because, you know, it's just like, you know, you can't put somebody doing Arnold Schwarzenegger's workout and think that everybody's going to look like him. You got to figure it out yourself. And that's the thing that, you know, that's the thing that I find really interesting about this sport is, and why it's so damn demanding, is that you have to go through that process. I mean, like you, when you're competing, you have to go through that whole process doing something that's really controversial, you know, to figure out if it's going to work, you know, 4 months later. It's like, you got to, that's a lot of damn time invested. And as you know, if it doesn't work, it's pretty goddamn disappointing. Yeah. And yet it's part of the process. You can't get around that. Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Now you said he worked with you, but did you train with him in the gym?
No, I never actually got to train with him in the gym. He had moved from New York to Florida, and I believe he moved back to New York or something like that at the end. But I never actually got to train with him, which, you know, now it sucks because it's like, you always think there's time.
Right.
You know, Joe was young enough to where I'm like, you know, I'm going to take like a week at some point when I'm not busy and he's not busy. Yeah. I'm going to head down to Florida or New York, wherever he's at. And I'll just train with him and we'll pick each other's brains and hang out, and that'll be awesome. And
yeah,
it never happened because here we are, you know, he passed away. Here we are.
How about you, Emmerich? Did you train with Phil?
Yes, a few times. And actually, we even did a seminar together somewhere in Washington somewhere. But anyway, we was working out together and was doing this. In the meantime, I'm shutting down my computer. Let me shut down because I have my phone hanging on a screen and I had a warning on the phone that's overheating. The computer.
Don't you have a fire extinguisher? Just put that shit out. God damn it. Yeah. Look for the solution, Emmerich.
So then he was, I was doing my, you know, I tried to do negatives, but I didn't like the negatives, the old fashioned way you get stuck and somebody outside helps either touch your elbow or push the bar, you know, lift or make it easier. I didn't like that. So I had this where I have the load on the negative part all the time, but instead somebody lift for me, I had two guys on each side of the bar strip off some weight, so I was able to do the positive motion on my own, and I did not have this question in my head, how much these guys, they helped me, 10 pounds, 20 pounds, how much they took off the load. So it was confusing, and I realized that when that's happened with an outside help, no matter what, touching your elbow or the bar, even lift a little, you disconnect the message from the brain to the muscle because you don't know on your front lobe and you know how much weight will be taking off, how much the outside is going to help you. So I consider always that that guy who helps you, actually, it doesn't help you. It prevents you to grow because that mind-muscle connection get interrupted. Okay. So Phil saw that and he started incorporating it because he couldn't find helpers. He had somebody pressing down on the bar but don't help up. So every time he did a dumbbell for chest or for triceps, somebody was pressing on the way down but never had anybody to help him to perform the positive motion.
Yeah.
So that, and then... and then also Rich Gaspari, Phil, and myself, we plan to film this system. So they both came down. I used to own a gym here. And I tell you what, was the funniest time with Phil. Phil has a very good sense of humor. Me too. We like to joke. We had so much fun there with Gaspari and him. And he just, you know, trying to remember... I never had bad time with Phil. Even if something bothered me, we always was able to make a joke out about that. And we always laughing. I don't know if I can tell a couple of funny stories. You know, he was living in Washington State and was a bodybuilding contest and went there. So there were six guys on stage. And Phil, because She said, number 10, number 10 is the best, but nobody had number 10 there.
Sounds like an Arnold prank.
Sounds like Phil.
Sounds like Phil. I have to tell you, my story with Phil is I got to train with him, you know, which is a real honor and a treat. And I got to tell you something, you guys. You know, it reminded me, I trained, Jerry or Emmerich, have you ever trained with Tom Platz? You probably heard some of the stories, his training, you know. Yeah. He's insane. I mean, it's one of those things that there's a look. When you go into the gym and work out with him, there's something in his eyes that changed that's scary. Phil was like that. And when he was training, he got so focused on what he was doing. It's hard to describe, that intensity. And I don't think just anybody has that. And I think that's part of the reason why that Phil ended up creating a physique that was unlike anybody else's, really.
Yeah.
And what I don't know is when he was building that physique, was he training every body part every day? It was like, what was his split when he was actually building that original mass?
Originally, he was just working out like anybody else because he was going to gym, Fresno was working out, Flex Wheeler was working out. He started working out like anybody else, but he started to analyze. He said, wait a second. He started analyzing this little muscle, how much part of the exercises. So he realized that, that little deltoid, it helps your arm just to go from here back. So he started eliminating anything extra, not involving what he was focusing. And then he liked everything strict, and he was doing everything flexed. For example, if he did biceps, the entire motion was done by flexing continuously biceps. It's like when you're posing, he was continuously doing that. And that's why when you saw him like that, he was always doing that noise. Because he was everything, it was shaking. And I thought that he was shaking because heavy, but wasn't that heavy. He said, well, Emmerich, I work as heavy as I can, but without cheating. He said, I can double the weight and do the other guys. But he was everything focusing and squeezing it. Even calves, when you pose your calves, any exercise, he was pretending that he's posing the muscle. So he was always flexing, contracting.
I think he was very big on not doing things like he didn't ever add like rear delt flies or anything like that. He never had those in his program. And I asked him, I said, why? He's like, you think that doing chin-ups and rows, you think your rear delts are not getting worked? He's like, what's working it more, 20 pounds or the 400 pounds that you're rowing with or the 220 pounds that you're doing chin-ups with? And it was like, the things that he would say are so obvious that we should know. Yeah. It's like a little light goes on. You're like, aha, that makes sense. Like, meanwhile, I'm sitting there trying to figure it out. Like, does he have a new exercise we're going to do later on? I'm just not advanced enough. Like, you start thinking like there's some kind of magical exercise that he'll give you eventually when you get to that level. And then he throws that out there and you're like, oh, okay, well, that totally makes sense.
Very intuitive.
Yeah, for sure. When he's doing like dumbbell rows for the...
He loved two-arm dumbbell rows. Press,
he said, you're already working your real delts, so why go back and do it again? Instead, he was focusing, instead doing every single real deltoid or chest exercise a day, instead go ahead and do it every day.
Yeah.
So he was very short workouts, come next day back and do it again. Instead, because you go to the gym, you can see guys, every single chest exercise existing, they're doing it that day.
Well, and
incline flies, everything.
And one of the things about Phil and guys like that are successful like that is they understand the minute that they step into the gym, it's all work, it's business. And it's you're putting yourself through hell. And most people don't understand that. Most people that are going to the gym, I mean, the bodybuilders generally do. The ones that understand training to the nth degree, and I believe that Phil was that guy because of what you guys are saying. He was very intuitive, he figured that shit out. And there are many ways to get the body to respond. And Phil was definitely one of those guys. But I'll tell you what, and I know you guys can both understand this, and I mentioned this before, most people have no fucking clue what goes into building a body like that. They have no fucking clue. And you can tell by the way some of the shit that they say, not only that, but just watch them in the fucking gym. Those fucking
Emmerich said, they do every chest, like every single chest thing in there, right? Listen, if you're actually training hard, there's no way you're doing more than one or two exercises,
right,
and you can't do anymore. If you're right. literally doing to the point where you've stimulated growth, you're done. You're not doing 5, 6, 7, 10 exercises. It's impossible.
Yeah. Yeah. And funny thing is, well, go ahead.
You know, people think that they didn't do enough. So once Phil told me that he trained somebody, work out very short, yeah? So he said he pretended he's leaving. He came back. The guy was at work. He said, what are you doing? He said, well, I think things that we did enough. Because the shortcut, he said, we're done. Go home.
Let me ask you.
I said, no, but I feel like I need more. I said, no, you don't need.
Let me ask you this. You said he was training several times a day. Of course, you know, in Serious Growth, we had a program where you train more times a day. Was Phil doing that actually before? Because I came back from like late 80s, early 90s from Bulgaria, where I learned this, where they were training five times a day, very much what Phil's doing. Was he doing that shit before that? Like, what
no.
was he doing? Was it afterwards?
No. He started doing that right before he did Orange County.
Okay, so it was later.
Because, yeah, he started, I would have to look up my records because I remember when we first time met and then, you know, we were talking so much, they almost missed to go on stage. Because, you know, he was still in the parking lot, just a regular sweat. I remember was a pink sweat top, you know, and everybody was already in. Pumping, warming up, and we're still on a parking lot. The son said, hey, Phil, come on, you're going to have to go on stage soon. So back then, he was telling me that he started doing days when he works out twice.
Yeah.
He works twice. And he basically was on the same concept that if you stimulate your muscles more frequently, I think.
All right, let's take a quick break so I can tell you about our product.
Do you want a bone-crushing grip? Good, because you're going to get one with the amazing new TRS Gripper. It's a progressive grip builder with longer handles and a special ergonomic design that's like a dozen hand grippers in one. Start off easy and work your way up to quickly build your grip strength from wet noodle to pulverizing. The package includes a video from the world-famous strength coach, Dr. Russ Horine, the man who worked with Leo Costa to help bring you Big Beyond Belief in the Bulgarian Power Burst. Dr. Horine shows you a simple and easy to follow workout plan that takes just minutes a day right from in front of your TV set if you want. So click on the link below and let's get started building you a stronger, firmer, bone-crushing grip.
Tried it out. He was like a scientist in the gym.
Yeah.
He had something in his head, he tried it. Also, if you see him squatting, you never saw him going down as to the ground squats. Because he was believing that when you go too deep, you take off load from your front leg because your hips and glutes get more involved than lower back. So he always believed, just go parallel with the floor where you still have already a lower back and the hamstring and the glutes, but it's at less percentage.
Yeah, he's big on staying inside that mid-range of motion. That was kind of like his signature there. So you'd never fully lock out. It would always be like just before lockout, just before the bottom. It would be, he would say, move it as fast as you can while keeping control.
Yeah.
Right. So don't go super slow. He's like, injuries happen when you're slow. Everything that pretty much we were taught, Phil went the opposite way with.
Yeah.
And it's not because I think he was trying to go against the grain. It's because he went in the gym and tried these different things. You know, because when you lock that weight out, you can hold that weight up there all day long because the joint takes it. So he figured if you take the joint out of it, now it stays on the muscle, right? So he just started applying that to everything. And, you know, I don't know if, he had posted stuff like that in Pro Muscle, but he started handing that down to his clients being like, look, stay inside the mid-range of motion, you know, go to positive failure, not beyond positive failure. You know, there was a lot of things that I think that he learned from trial and error that he was handing down to everybody else. And the stuff, I'll tell you, like, it worked, you know, it absolutely worked. Although it looked completely crazy and you had the form police that we call them being like, oh, you have to do a full range. I'm like, yeah, but but I'm 250 pounds. You're 150 pounds. Like, what are you talking about? Like, this is working. So why should I stop? And
exactly.
You get that a lot. You know, you get the people trying to tell you that you're doing it wrong, but you've progressed so far past them.
Yeah.
That, you know, but again, you know, you always think that somebody else knows some kind of secret, right? Yeah. No matter how much you know, you think somebody else has some secret they've stumbled upon.
Right.
So listen to them. And what you inevitably do is try to go back and do the full range again. The results kind of halt or they slow down. And then you say, well, what the heck is going on? And then you go back again and start doing the mid range. And all of a sudden it's there again, you know? Yeah. And I do believe that the mid range does create some inflexibility, which you should be stretching afterwards. But this is not a sport like an athletic sport. This is bodybuilding.
That's right.
About muscle. It's not about how functional you are.
Years,
I learned, okay, well, once bodybuilding's over, I'm probably going to have to get functional again because I'm building up these imbalances. But for now, I just need to build mass, and this is working, you know?
Yeah, yeah. You know, Don the Ripper Ross. Do you remember him, Jerry? Don
yes, sir. Ross? Yep. Yep.
Do you remember Don Ross?
Yes.
Yeah, he told me one time when I was down at Gold's Gym, I became very good friends with him down there. He said something that made me think. And I wasn't sure what he meant. He said, all exercises work. And then he said, they work to a degree. And then it's up to you to figure out the ones that work to your degree. And that's exactly what guys like Phil was actually doing. You know, he was trying shit out and not being satisfied with just saying, okay, this is the way you should be doing it. He's a pioneer. You know, that's what pioneers do. They go out there and then all these other people that don't know shit for what they're doing, they're firing arrows at you constantly. Like, yeah, you know, what are you doing with that? You're pulsating or whatever, you're cheating. They have no fucking clue that more than half the battle is that you got to feel what you train, no matter how and what the tempo is. And if you're doing a partial rep, feel the muscle that you're training, exhaust it, and let it recover. Fucking, it's pretty that simple, you know? But there's a lot of work that goes into that. That's my opinion.
I think Phil is really big on not going extremes, right? So you have the extreme where you have the form police where they say you got to go to full range with this motion and, you know, 15 reps or whatever. And then you have the opposite where they, I can't remember that guy's name. I think it was John Little was his name, who wrote the books like Power Bodybuilding and Power Factor Training and things like that, where it was only partials. Phil was right in the middle.
Yeah.
So it's like a partial, but not all partials. Right. And there are some exercises that certain partials work at the bottom range or at the top range. So it really was more of him picking these things apart, not just theoretically, but applying it, and then finding out what worked and what didn't. But not, he was also like Bruce Lee. Bruce Lee created Jeet Kune Do, which was a fighting system of all fighting systems. Phil was kind of a student of all training systems.
Yeah.
It didn't matter what, you know, like he would put it in his training system if it worked. It didn't matter whether it's full range, partial range, static holds, you know, it was, you know, body weight chins, or if it was, you know, it didn't matter. If it worked, he would put it in his system.
There you go.
He'd only put it in there after he tried it enough to know that he could replicate the results over and over again every time.
Tried and tested, and that's kind of where it's at. That comes back to what we talked about earlier in the show. It's hard to replace firsthand experience, you know? True knowledge is through that. Einstein said that. And listen, Phil's going to be, in my mind, you know, in that world, he's going to be remembered for a long time. I'm sure of it. And the friends that he had, I consider Phil my friend. I know you guys were very close to him. He's one of those kind of guys that will always be running around in my head for a long time.
Yeah.
And that's why I wanted to have you guys on, because we knew him kind of from different at different times in different ways. And I think it gives a better picture and maybe a clearer picture about who Phil really was.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Phil to me was like my little brother. And, you know, he was the type of guy, he had $2, he gave you $1. you know, when you get a concert with Joe, he got a $30,000. I guess we get out from Joe, Phil said, I want to give you half. I said, no. I said, you know, without you, I wouldn't get this. So half is more than I wouldn't make anything. I said, no, for $30,000, it's nothing. That type of guy he was.
That's right. I mean, good character. You're a very good character.
And you know what? He loved his family.
Yeah.
He loved his family. You know, he loved his Pamela, his wife. He was loving her and her little daughter. He was such a good human being, you know.
My dad told me one time, it was about a month before he died, and he told me, he looked over at me. I used to go every Sunday and watch football with him. He was in a rest home. This is applying to Phil, where I'm going at. My dad looked over at me one day and he said, you know, Leo, I'm going to live forever. And he just said it just so candidly, just calm. And I looked at him, I started laughing, but I'm going to tell you something. He was right, because my dad is in my head more today than he was when he was around. I mean, I don't know if I hate to say that, but it's true, and it's all good. It's good memories, but he was right about that. He knew something that I didn't. He is living forever in my head. Phil, you're living forever in our heads for sure. And yes. once again, guys, I really appreciate your time. You know, if we ever want to come back and talk about something, please reach out. I'm all down for that.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much, because, he's in my mind, he was one of the smartest guys in bodybuilding, and you never saw him force feeding. And I've spent many days with him doing all these years since we met, and I tell you what, some days he had only like 12 eggs and 3 apples, but following day went to sushi bar, he emptied the bar. So he was eating when he was hungry. Had days where barely eat, you know. So if you would be that day when he was eating just a couple apples, you see how in the hell he built that physique. But then you were another day when his body was asking for food, he was out eating anybody. He was eating, and didn't matter what time. He was hungry, he was eating. He was not hungry, no problem. He didn't go by, every 3 hours I have to eat.
Yeah, Jerry, you can have the last word on this.
Well, he spoke very highly all the time of Emmerich. I mean, I can't tell you, like, he just constantly put Emmerich on a pedestal and how much knowledge Emmerich had. So no, he really loved you, Emmerich, as a brother.
I know. And the sweetest thing, you know, I hope I'm not getting emotional, but the sweetest thing, just 2 days before he passed away, I want to talk to him so bad. And then he was very weak. So Pamela said, Emmerich wants to talk to you. And he told Pamela that Emmerich was the angel looking over my health all these years. So that was...
He talked about him all the time. And, you know, Emmerich's talking about the eat when you're hungry. And every other principle that Phil taught me, I still hand down now. Like, I hand that down to my clients. I hand it to people in the gym, the youngsters coming up. The information that he left is his legacy. And that information is going to be passed down to the next generation, and that generation is going to pass it down. And eventually nobody will know where the information came from, but it came from Phil.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's his legacy. Well,
I'm trying to keep alive all his knowledge and spread it.
I've said it before on some shows, the mark of excellence, and this is directly relating to Phil, is that it stands the test of time and never goes out of style. And we'll leave it right there. Phil, I hope you're kicking ass wherever you are, and I know you are. You guys take care. Thanks for coming on. I appreciate
it. Thank you.
Thanks, Leo.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye, Jerry. Bye, Jerry. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye, Rick. See you, Leo.
Thanks for listening to the Serious Growth Podcast. For more episodes like the one you just listened to, subscribe to us on your mobile podcast app and leave us a review. If you'd like to reach out, you can find us online at seriousgrowth.com. Until next time, train smart and train hard.